from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Monday the 25th of July and this is Game On. Coming up today, more breaking news in the world of GAA as Colm O'Rourke looks set to take over the Meath footballers. Colm Keyes, Brian Sheehan and Austin O'Malley are with me to discuss that and this.
And the referee sounds the final whistle. It's all over and Kerry are the champions. The Sam de Bloor Cup is heading to the kingdom after a gap of 8 years. Kerry All-Ireland champions.
In hurling, Kilkenny great Owen Larkin discusses the huge void in Kilkenny hurling after the exit of Brian Cody.
Back comes Owen Larkin. 1 point so far. In for Coverburn. It's in the back of the net. Two in a row. All of Kilkenny celebrating four in a row.
Plus, in racing, Barry Geraghty starts our coverage from the Galway races. And we'll get the latest on Irish footballers on the move, including Troy Parrott. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. I am delighted to say that Austin O'Malley is with me in studio to talk all things Gaelic football. It is the Monday after the All-Ireland football final and Kerry are the champions. A lot of people did predict that heading into the weekend, but Galway definitely gave them a game of it. Did you enjoy the weekend, Austin?
Oh, I thought it was incredible. Just what it was served up, like it was just it was phenomenal, you know. It was just a game that was laced with so many, I suppose, special and magic moments. And you had, you know, two guys going at it either end of the pitch, Clifford and Walsh, and both of them just gave an exhibition. And you know, I was just thinking again, coming, you know, after looking at it yesterday, in terms of, you know, if there was a neutral at a game that had never been there before, it was the ideal scenario. And it has, you know, it was just a feast of football, and it had everything that we love about the game.
Yeah, it was so entertaining from the very start. I think even just the tension and the drama, it's what you want when you're going to see a sporting event, especially one that means so much to so many people. Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent is with us as well. Colm, did you enjoy the spectacle yesterday?
I really did, Marie. Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. And as Austin mentioned there, to see two players like that involved in a shootout, it's very rare in an All-Ireland final that you get a players on opposite sides going at it like that. You'll often have a performance like Maurice Fitzgerald delivered in 1997 or even Pádraig Joyce in 2001, 10 points, 5 from free. Sean Cavanagh in 2008, fantastic performance. But for David Clifford and Shane Walsh to produce some of the scores, and even from the frees, the pressure they were under to score those frees, because everything counted. Absolutely everything counted. There was no real waste in this game. Everything had to go over to maintain momentum or to maintain a foothold in this game. So everything really counted. And even down to that last free, controversial as it was, over between the Hill and the Cusick stand that David Clifford scored from. Jack O'Connor said afterwards he went down purposely to look at the angle that David Clifford faced with that. He said there was a fair swirling wind around at that stage. That's the way it is in Croke Park. Obviously, the winds can change. But he said some shot now. And that's true, because really every kick that both men took were pressure kicks in that regard. And I just haven't seen a shootout in an All-Ireland final like that. There hasn't been anything like it from two opponents. And that's what made it really special, made it stand apart, really.
Yeah, it was fantastic stuff. We're going to be chatting to Brian Sheehan about all of that in a few moments. But first, Colm, let's start with the breaking news. There will be a Colm as well at the helm of the Meath footballers. Colm O'Rourke is set to become the new manager, and I think took a lot of people by surprise. As a Meath person, Colm, did it take you by surprise?
Not entirely. Maybe the speed with which it was done, yes, but I always suspected that if the committee charged with finding a successor to Andy McEntee, I always suspected that if Colm O'Rourke was asked, he would do it. I don't think he ever wanted to enter into an appointment process, interview process, but if the committee or if the county wanted him to do it, I felt that he would do it. And that's how I believe it transpired. I always thought at some stage he would not let his career pass without managing Meath, and this was probably his last opportunity. Colin would be 65 next month, the end of next month. I don't know, is there a first-time inter-county manager of that age before? Maybe there is, but it's not coming to mind for me. So really, this was probably his last opportunity to do that. And it's probably something he always wanted to do. I know he has said that he was turned down before. I'm not sure how hard he ever really chased the job. But I think this time he was willing and he was asked. And that's where it is now. So he has managed he has managed the under-21s and minors in the past. He has an extensive record at management at every other level, actually. Club, with Simonstown, he won back-to-backs in 2016-17. He's managed three Hogan Cups he has with St. Pat's, and of course a couple of international rules series. So he has extensive management experience, just not at senior inter-county level.
Austin, we know with management that often it's about timing and when you come in and who you've got and then what way the cards fall on your journey. Is this the right time for Colm O'Rourke?
I think it is. I think it's the right time for Meath to bring in someone of his stature as a figurehead and his leadership qualities. And a lot of it, again, will be what he puts in around him in terms of building a really solid and strong backroom team. There are many parts to that jigsaw we've seen with other teams that have been successful. So I think Meath need a figure like Colm, given his stature within the game, given, you know, his charisma. And, you know, we all know in terms of his character that he's flinty, he's not afraid to call things out. And I think maybe probably a Meath dressing room needs that now. And obviously, you know, when you look at and you think of Meath football, there are certain characters that stand out and he's one of them. And I think he'll have a great connection with the player bunch there. But as I said, it'll be largely about what he puts around him now, as all the good managers we've seen, even Jack O'Connor at his backroom team and Pádraig Joyce yesterday as well. Those little key pieces of the jigsaw, and to put those in place early and to build and create a vision for Meath football.
Yeah, I think when the time that he was involved compared to backroom teams now, they look completely different. They're so vast. But two players, or two people, Colm, that he has nominated to be selectors are Stephen Bray and Barry Callaghan, both familiar names within Meath football.
Yeah, Stephen Bray is the last All-Star Meath have had as far back as 2007, which probably underlines how poor the county has been since, really. And Barry Callaghan was an All-Ireland winner in 1996 and 1999 as well. And he has managed the under-21 team and under-20 team twice, two spells of it, one temporary in recent years. So I would probably agree with Austin there. I think Colm will bring leadership and he'll create a good environment. But I would imagine there will be a few additions on the coaching front there, because, you know, they really will need to expand what they have. Whether it's a good time for Colm or for Meath, you know, it's not going to be easy. I think the idea that Colm will come in and change things and there'll be an upsurge, there may be some upsurge, but I'm not so sure about the quality in the county. It's not going to, as I said, happen easily. I mean, Meath have a very poor record at underage level. Okay, they've won an All-Ireland minor title in recent years, but if you look back at their under-21 record, one Leinster final appearance in 21 years. If you look back at the record the clubs have, the last time a Meath club was in a Leinster club final, never mind winning one, was 2004. That's a long time at two critical levels for Meath teams to be very much out of the picture. Yeah. Now, obviously, there's always players there, and nothing ever works in straight lines, and, you know, individuals obviously come together to make good teams. But it will be a challenge, because really, you know, the county is at a low ebb right now. Andy McEntee gave everything to it. There's no doubt, time and commitment. He gave everything to it over 6 years, and it wasn't for the want of that effort. But you would wonder how well resourced, playing wise, that Meath are to make any imprint over the next few years.
And I think as well, if you even just look at who look at where the Liam McCarthy and the Sam Maguire are going to be residing for the next year, and there are two counties that have their underage structures right and are getting success there and creating that conveyor belt and obviously reaping the rewards. And that will bring us along nicely to yesterday's game, because Brian Sheehan is with us on the line. Brian, are you down in Kerry, or are things still wild down there? Have they settled down a little bit?
Unfortunately, I had to come home yesterday evening, so I wasn't in full swing with the celebrations. But from what I gathered, it was a great night in Dublin, and just seen a few pictures now of the homecoming. There was a great crowd gathered in Tralee, so I'd imagine it'll be the start of another long night.
Yeah, I'd say so as well. And look, it's a relative famine that you have. I mean, compared to other counties, it isn't a famine. But like, did you think it would take there would be such a gap in All Ireland wins?
To be honest, no. Going back to 2014 was the last one. I was involved in that myself, and we just felt we had the crux of a very good team. That time, I suppose, obviously, I think we lost Declan O'Sullivan the following year. I think he's just injuries, the body got the better of him. But other than that, we still had the crux of a very good team. But look, you're just never guaranteed success. You know, the Dublin machine was probably kicking off there as well, and are continuing on. I think they had a bit of a blip, and they just took over again. So you just don't know. Success is not guaranteed, but yeah, to be honest, I didn't think we'd have to wait this long. You know, we missed out in 15, lost to Dublin again in an All-Ireland, and again lost to Dublin again in 19. So look, I suppose we just came up against a side there when Dublin were dominant, but look, it was great to finally get the monkey off the back. I think this team, a lot of these young fellas were involved from about 16 onwards. Had lost the All-Ireland to Dublin, lost out last year, so there was a lot of pressure on them to win an All-Ireland. And I think, especially after the beating Dublin, there was probably even more pressure on them to win the All-Ireland, because it wouldn't have meant, you know, beating Dublin wouldn't have been as significant if they hadn't won the All-Ireland. So I'm hopeful that they've got a taste of it, that the taste of success, and they'll want more. So hopefully they can kick on from here.
Well, hopefully for ye anyway, Brian, they can kick on and keep on winning. I'm not sure if anyone else will agree. Austin is, O'Malley's with us here as well. Austin, I know you work in the field of performance, and Brian mentioned the pressure there that was on these players, and there really was. And you know, you're citing the amount of minor All-Irelands that they've won and the talent that was in there, and you know, people were questioning whether they could win a game in a tight situation and if they were going to be able to deliver, but they were able to do that in Croke Park. Just from observing them over the last while, was there a change in them, did you sense?
I think there was, yeah, and notably this year. And I know Jack O'Connor referenced it after the Dublin game in terms of the bit around resilience and that bit about, you know, around bounce back ability, and that came to the fore, and it was something that that's been referenced within the Kerry camp quite a bit this year. And I think obviously Tony Griffin is in there working with them on that front as well. But it was notable at different points that, you know, when the fat was in the fire, they have found answers throughout those games. And even yesterday, you know, when the game was going down the home stretch, you still felt that they were going to find something. They never looked rattled, even going in at half time, you know, 7-8 down, they had fluffed 8 scoring chances up front. They didn't look like things were fluid, but you still felt that it was only going to be, you know, take a segment in the game where they'd put their shoulders back and they'd open up and they'd find the scores and so on. And there was key moments in that, in terms of, even, you know, I think reading a piece today by David Clifford saying around his free take and even how he's worked on that from last year, Maurice Fitzgerald giving him, you know, after he missed a couple of handy ones in 2020 against Cork. So he's a guy that, you know, has gone away and you think he's at the height of his game, but still, you know, working on it from that perspective, and that. So I think the psychology side of it and the mindset side of it is definitely something Kerry have embraced this year as well, and the work that Tony Griffin has done there. So I think it definitely added percentages to them.
Brian, hearing Jack speaking after the game, and he was asked repeatedly what he said at half time, he didn't give too much away. I think it was mentioned there was a few yahoos in the dressing room, but what can he say in that situation? What does he generally do to settle things down?
In fairness, usually Jack is pretty well refined in the dressing room. He's not too, there's not many times I've seen Jack get animated. He's pretty cool and is very, very clear in getting and points across. You know, one thing I would say about Jack is he has a very good very good football IQ. He sees things very quickly and deals them on the spot. And usually at halftime, he would come in and relay a couple of messages, from the backroom team or from someone maybe in the stand that was watching, and he relays them very, very much. But by all accounts yesterday, all right, I did hear that he was a bit animated in the dressing room. I think it was, again, a bit of everything, a bit of pressure from his side as well, from the point of view that, they just probably spurned a lot of kicking chances. You know what I mean? The fact that they went in only a point down at half time, having kicked seven wides and Galway only kicking one, I think there was just a bit of tension there. I just think it was. I think he knew this was a fantastic opportunity for this group, and I just think the pressure overall that there was on the group and on himself, and I think that was it. But again, look, I think sometimes that's putting a bit of fire on the fellas. It's needed. And I think, he got the reaction he needed out of them. And even a few things like the substitutions that he made at halftime and taking off two of his key players or two of his senior players in David and Paul Gainey, I think it kind of, showed that, well, hold on a second, no one's safe here. Mm-hmm. If he's after taking off these two boys, he's after having got a couple of us here in the dressing room, I think he probably told fellas, there could have been two or three more maybe, and he probably gave them 10 minutes to get their act together. So, look, that maybe that's what was needed. I just think maybe they were just a bit, whether it was a bit of fear or whether it was just the pressure that was on them. But definitely, look at what the second half. I thought Kerry looked well. I wouldn't say comfortable, but there were 2 points down there, maybe about 10 minutes into the second half, and I just felt it was a critical stage of the game that they didn't go further behind. They felt the next score was important, and they managed to bring back level. So I think that was a big thing for them. They didn't let Galway open up a big lead in them.
Yeah, well, he sent them out early anyway, which was quite surprising when people saw them running out onto the pitch. Colm, you've been around Jack for quite a number of years as well, and you've seen some unbelievable highs for him and some lows as well. Have you noticed that he's evolved in that time that you've been encountering him?
Yeah, I found him very relaxed to deal with this year, generally. He was very, very calm about things, after league games. He was very sure of himself, too, in terms of what he wanted to do. And I think, look, right from the outset, I think the statement, as much as the contribution of bringing Paddy Talley in, a Tyrone man, given the history between Tyrone and Kerry over the last two decades, and obviously it's a history of hurt by and large in All-Ireland finals for Kerry against Tyrone, but that was a statement to me that whatever had to be done by Jack, and Paddy was just one element to it, and obviously people in Kerry were fearful that maybe it would set them on a particular path of how they wanted to play, but there was many elements to Jack's backroom team. I mean, Micheál Quirk in his own right is a very, very good coach, and sure as Brian Sheehan will testify, Dermot Murphy, very, very grounded man, very, very sensible man who knows his football really well, and in his own right could be a Kerry manager, I would have thought. And then Jack at the head of affairs. So there was a lot of calmness about him. He's always been sure about what he wants from a team, right back to the very start, bringing in Aidan O'Mahony and Paul Galvin when he took over from Paddy O'Shea. They were probably statement inclusions at that time too. And he's always sought to get the most out of players, bringing back Mike McCarthy. He's always sure about the type of player he wants in a particular position. And this year, Tadhg Morley filled that role very, very, very effectively. He mightn't have had his most prominent game yesterday, but he was always there and he was always lurking around. And, maybe he could have helped out a little bit more with Tom O'Sullivan, but I thought as the game progressed, he made his presence felt a lot more. So Jack is always sure about what he wants from his team and who he wants to fill those key roles. But to answer your question, I did find him very, very calm and relaxed about it. For a man that was probably under a little bit of pressure, even though he's won 3 All-Irelands before. But it's a remarkable record he has to have league and championship in the first year of each of his three terms to deliver that for Kerry each time. It really does put him up with, right up there with, among all the great managers, I have to say.
Absolutely, yeah. He really has done brilliant things in the game. And that Paddy Talley thing, Brian, it is quite interesting because The narrative is that Kerry people were, you know, almost dismayed that they would need a defensive coach to come in and sort out the backs, that that's not the way they play football. Was that the reality down there, though?
Look, I just think Jack realised that if Kerry were to win an All-Ireland, they had to stop conceding goals. And, you know, I just think if you just go back to the All-Ireland finals or the last 2 years against Dublin 19, you know, conceding goals, you would probably say maybe soft goals or goals that you shouldn't concede, you know, someone running down the middle and scoring cost them an All-Ireland. I think if you even look back to the Tyrone game last year as well in the semi-final, conceding three goals, you know, you're not going to win many football games if you're conceding the goals like that. So I think he just identified a big area that was of concern. While it might have taken away, I think, the goal scoring threat in the other end, because I don't think Kerry probably were scoring as many goals as what they did previously. If you're conceding goals, it's going to find it very hard to win games. I think he identified that. And yeah, a big call to bring in Paddy Talley, a Tyrone man, I suppose, and look, defensive football isn't something that comes into play in Kerry, but look, he identified it, he's a sort as an area. Again, I suppose when we're talking about Jack's IQ when it comes to football, he just identified that it was an area that Kerry had to tidy up if they were going to be competing for Sam Maguire. And, you know, in his first season, he managed to nullify that and to only concede one goal in the championship and two goals throughout the whole campaign. I think is a testament to Jack and his backroom team, but also, you know, as I said, to everyone else, for the team as well, for buying into it. You know, every fella bought into it, every fella knew what his role was in the team. And, you know, some players might think that their job wasn't to trap back and defend, or that maybe tackling or walking wasn't part of the game, but every fella bought into it, you know, and it all paid off in the end.
I know down in Kerry, Brian, as well, you don't like to build people up too much, you know, because, you know, it can be a hard fall as well. But just given the day that's in it and the performance yesterday, David Clifford, like, how impressed, as somebody who's worn the jersey, been there on the big day, done it on the big stage, you know, it's not easy to deliver what he delivered yesterday with the expectation of the whole of the kingdom on his shoulders. How impressed are you with a young lad like him?
He's a special kind of a character, you know. I suppose this fella has had weight on his shoulders since he started playing football, right from the time he was involved in the schools with the SEM, winning the Hogan Cup. He's been involved in the pressure with the Kerry Minors, and I suppose the big step up into the Kerry Seniors. You know, he was this new kid on the block, and there was so much expectation for him, and he just came in his first year with Kerry, and even from then he hit the ground running. But I suppose for me, the big thing about it was that, you know, the whole Kerry season and the whole Kerry All-Ireland series, a lot of it hinged on the likes of him and Sean O'Shea, and probably more so on David. And I just feel that the more pressure this fella seems to go under, the bigger he seems to rise to the occasion. And I think if you look at any sports in the world, all the best players in the world, I think the bigger the occasion, the bigger they lift their game for it. And I just think he's got that character and that demeanour about him that if the bigger the occasion, this fella's going to step up to the place. And look, I just thought it was fantastic. You know, when Kerry really needed him in the first half when they were struggling, he was looking for the ball. If he pumped into him, hand up, give it to me. And, you know, he won two fantastic marks. Inside there, kicked a fantastic score off his left in the first half, and even the second half again, he kicked two off his right. You know, he had a combination of everything from freeze to marks to the left leg to the right leg. And look, at the end of the day, he was a difference. I think if Kerry didn't have David playing yesterday, the Sam Walker, I don't think would be in the kingdom this evening. So look, he's just a very special talent. I say we're just very lucky that we have him. I suppose we've had like Colin Cooper before that as well. So we're just very lucky that we get to have the likes of Colin Cooper and now David Clifford. And I'd say he's a young man yet, so hopefully he will continue to progress as the years goes on. But yeah, exceptional talent, and just a joy to watch him yesterday in full flow in Croke Park on All-Ireland Final Day.
Colin, have you seen many displays like it on All-Ireland Final Day?
No, as I said at the outset, Marie, between himself and Shane Walsh yesterday, just the package between them was just phenomenal. But just to follow up what Brian says about David Clifford, right from the moment he's been able to absorb pressure all the way, and the weight of expectation around that young man, he's met it every time. I even go back to his last three league campaigns, if I was to pick a player of the league from this year, it would probably be David Clifford from last year, the short league that it was. Kerry ended up joint champions, but again, against Dublin and against Galway in the league. And it's a great sign of a player that he just does it so consistently. And even in the interrupted league in 2020, I think he finished up with 232 or something like that. I know he was an All-Star nominee and people questioned that because it appeared that he didn't have such a good game against Cork, but he was phenomenal in the league. And that's such a sign of a player that in the last three league campaigns, you could probably call him, on balance, the player of the league too. And I would expect he will end up as Footballer of the Year and he'll get a fourth All-Star from 5 years. That is some return for the first 5 years of his career. Now, naturally, he'd set aside everything for what he won yesterday. But on an individual basis, his level of consistency and his ability to absorb all the pressure. I mean, people talked about David Clifford years in advance of his senior debut because of what he did for schools. And obviously, you score 4-4 in an All-Ireland minor final and great things are expected of you. And you deliver 5 years later with the stockpile of individual awards he has got since. That's really measuring up to it. So, you know, is he on the path to being one of the greatest players ever? I think he's firmly down that road at this stage.
And Austin, we have to have a word as well for Shane Walsh, because again, he lit up Crow Park, unfortunately for him, on the losing side, but another fantastic display on the big day.
Incredible, you know, to land 9 points and just the quality of them and the artistry around it. Like, he was, you know, Merlin, the magic maker he was out there. Himself and Clifford were both exceptional, but you know, and I still don't think we probably have seen the best of Shane Walsh, you know. And another guy that there's definitely probably another level in him. But what he done yesterday, and you know, the big moments he had, and he made a mockery of defenders yesterday at times. That one particularly where he was underneath the Hogan, where he went in, bumped off his man, and cut out. And you know, the angle was so tight, and just nonchalantly slotted it over. Like, so, his impact on the game was unbelievable, you know. It's probably the greatest show in an All-Ireland final from a player on the losing team. You know, unfortunately, he hasn't got a Celtic cross, but just, I think, and again, when you talk about pressure and, you know, the temperament and the character that he showed yesterday, because there was a lot being written and a lot being said that he hadn't played well in the last two games. I think James Morgan had tagged him in the Armagh game and had done quite a good job, and I think it was Conor McCluskey in the Derry game. So, you know, and Park Joyce referenced in the piece today, like, that, you know, it was unfounded criticism because they'd actually been playing a little bit deeper to suit the game plan within those games. They played him higher up the field yesterday, and you know, he gave Thomas Sullivan a torrid time, but an exceptional talent. We've seen all the best bits of him yesterday, and I fully believe there's probably more, you know, in the locker. Unfortunately, Galway didn't get enough of ball to him in the last probably 10 minutes, and that was probably, you know, it was decisive going down the home stretch.
So, Brian, I know David Clifford said that this team are only getting started. The Chasing Pack, in fairness, they're not too far behind. There are some good teams coming up, but just how much potential is in this Kerry team, do you think?
Yeah, there is. And you know, I suppose if you look at the age profile, they're at a great age, even like for Shawnee O'Shea, David Clifford. I'm not sure David, but Shawnee's only 24 years of age and he's captain of the Kerry team to All-Ireland. If you take out David Moran, Paul Gainey out of the starting 15, and possibly Paul Murphy, then I think outside of that, everyone is under the age of 30 years of age, or joining them probably in their mid-20s. So there is massive opportunity there for this team to kick on, but it doesn't always happen. And I think we kind of saw that with ourselves in 2014. We felt we could have kicked on, but it doesn't happen. But I think the fact that the pressure has now come off this group, having beaten Dublin, having won the All-Ireland, I'm just really hoping that they've had a taste for success, because I know when I started off and you win an All-Ireland, it's, you know, there's no other feeling like it, and all of a sudden that taste for hunger for success still there, and you try for it. So I'm hoping now that they really enjoy this and that they now know what it's like to win, and then they savour it and then put the work in again and even go harder next year again. But look, it's all well and good saying it. It all depends. I think, you know, if you look back, I think there's other teams now that are going to start coming. Galway now have realised that how close they are to it. I think Armagh will obviously be looking at themselves, thinking that, you know, how close they were to Galway at that time, the quarter final. And look, at the end of the day, I think Dublin too are another team that had Conn been playing in the semi final. You know, it could have been a different game. So look, this doesn't just mean that Kerry have won this All-Ireland, that they're going to be guaranteed success. There's three or four other teams that will really fancy themselves, but I think for belief within the squad, after getting the monkey off the back of beating Dublin and winning the Celtic Cross, I just like to think now that they'll have the bit between their teeth for more success.
Okay, well, time will tell. Brian Sheehan, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate you taking the time, and enjoy the celebrations tonight, no doubt. They will be great crack. Colm, just before we finish up, there is a little bit of news floating around, as there always is when the seasons come to an end. And one piece that raised a lot of eyebrows this morning was the possibility of Jason Sherlock going to Monaghan. Is this a realistic thing, do you reckon?
Yeah, I think it's well advanced. If Jason Sherlock wants the Monaghan job, Marie, he will get it. He is their priority. My understanding is that it is well down the tracks. It's well advanced. It's obviously down to Jason. Now, there are other local interest, but from my understanding, Jason Sherlock's job to turn down. Likelihood is he will take it, I'm sure. He wants to get into inter-county management. Monaghan would provide a decent entry level for somebody like him. There are some talented players. There are some talented young players, albeit obviously there's decisions for Conor McManus and Darren Hughes and others who are well into their 30s now and may consider extending their career under a new manager might be just a bridge too far for them. I'm not sure on that, but it's certainly a challenge for him to really test his inter-county management credentials. He's already, you know, he's had a great run, obviously, with Jim Gavin and Dublin during the five in a row as the Dublin forwards coach. So this is a test to any manager, any prospective first-time manager going into an Ulster Championship or going into Ulster in Division 1 would be tough. But as I said, he is their number one target, and from my understanding, it's his to turn down.
Okay, and what about Dublin and Desi Farrell? Lots of rumours flying around that he is set to step away.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one now. Obviously, there are rumours and lots of speculation about him. You know, when he weighs it up, how far were Dublin away from a Kerry team and they didn't have Conor Callaghan? I think that's a very decisive factor there when he weighs that up. And when you think of it, 3 years ago, Dublin needed Paul Mannion, Jack McCaffrey, Stephen Cluxton and Conor Callaghan to take Kerry to win the five in a row. None of them were playing the last day against Kerry, yet they got to within that extraordinary kick from Sean O'Shea. So realistically, Dublin are very, very close to Kerry, and we mentioned it there in the previous segment. You know, the landscape is changed. It's not laid out for one team to dominate as you might expect Kerry to do so now. Dublin are right there, brought in a couple of decent additions this year, primarily Lee Gannon. So there are players there. There's always players in Dublin that can be brought through. As to whether Desi would stay on, I would have thought he would extend by a year, but there are certainly suggestions that he is ready to pack it in and move on to something else.
We're going to be talking to Owen Larkin after the break, but just before we do, Colm, is there any front runners for the vacant Kilkenny job?
I expect Derek Ling would be the front runner anyway, having delivered an All-Ireland under-20 title for Kilkenny, but obviously there will be interest in Henry Shefflin too. There is no doubt about that. Henry Shefflin is a club colleague of TJ Reid, Adrian Mullen and Owen Cody. Owen Cody is his nephew. I'm sure Henry Shefflin deep down would like to work in a manager-player relationship, especially with TJ, who may only have a year or two left, that he would like to work for them. So from that point of view, if Kilkenny wanted him, and I'm not sure whether he is their primary choice or would be, and maybe they haven't even got around to having that discussion yet, but if he was, it would be a hard one for Henry to turn down. I know Liam Cahill turned his native county down last year, but he very, very quickly linked up with them this year. It would be hard for Henry to stay in Galway if Kilkenny wanted him, and that prospect of working with TJ and some of his club colleagues who he's won back-to-back All-Ireland club medals, club titles with 2019 and 2020. That's an appetising prospect for him, even if there is, you know, a loyalty issue having committed to Galway. But Henry's a big figure in Kilkenny. I know obviously things cooled off between himself and Brian Cody this year, but he's a big figure in Kilkenny and he is a winner on the evidence of his club activity. So that's a temptation for them to consider, certainly. And I expect Eddie Brennan would be in any conversation too, having managed the Kilkenny under-21s in the past and also Laois, did a very fine job at Laois too.
Okay, well, plenty to ponder there. Thank you so much, Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent. We will talk to you again very, very soon. We're going to take a very quick break now, though, and then we'll be chatting to Owen Larkin about Brian Cody.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. Austin O'Malley is with me in studio, and we're now joined by Owen Larkin to talk about the departure of the great Brian Cody. Owen, GAA pitches around the country are going to look a little bit different with no Brian Cody patrolling them. How's everyone in Kilkenny about it?
For opinions, both emotion and probably sadness, and sadness around Kilkenny, I suppose, that Brian is not going to be on there very late for Kilkenny anymore. But there'll be one pitch in Ireland, I suppose, will be glad to have him on the sideline, and that'll be our own club in Jersey.
Yeah, I'd say he'll be down there the whole time, because he's going to have an awful lot of more time in his hands, having spent so many years going in and out to Nolan Park and doing the training and gyms, and I'd say he's involved in everything. What kind of a manager was he?
Look, he was a great manager, I think. He always knew the right thing to say. I always knew that if somebody needed a helping hand with anything, and I think that was his biggest trait. He was good at managing people, and I'd say that probably came from his profession of being a teacher and a principal later on. Then, and he brought that into hurling. Obviously, look, tactical ways, hurling ways, and all that kind of stuff, that speaks for itself. I think I read somewhere the other day he's given 40 years of service to Kilkenny hurling between player and manager, and look, that speaks volumes about the man.
Yeah, it really does. You sound like you're on the side of a pitch there yourself as well, are you?
I am. I'm Mark Camogie at the moment, yeah.
Oh, very good. So the championship's still going on ahead of the All-Ireland final, is it?
It is. I'm at the underage matches here. I have a daughter playing here at Camogie, so we have to give back, I suppose. They spent enough time on my game, so I have to give back now.
Absolutely. So your experience with them as well, Owen, like you detailed in the book your own personal struggles, and it seems like Brian Cody was there for you when you needed him.
Yeah, he was. Look, I suppose he just seen that something wasn't quite right with me, and I just took the couple of minutes to pick up the phone and just asked, was there something wrong? And just seen that everything wasn't what it should be, and one simple question then and everything changed for me, I suppose. And that's, like I said earlier on, that's the man management style the Brian has. If he sees that there's something not quite right, and he investigates it and sees, can he get to the bottom of it, and sees his rant, that he can do, and that's what he done for me. But look, he's done that for numerous players over the years. Might be to the same extent as what he done for me, but definitely I know of a good few lads that he's helped through jobs and things like that as well. So his ethos was that if I can get the best version of a person, and his life is good, well, then his hurling will be good as well. And that's what he taught.
Very logical way of thinking about things. All right. We know that he's ruthless. Like, that's something that you associate with him. And we know that he's a winner as well. Does he have a softer side?
He probably does have a little bit of a soft side. He won't like anybody knowing that he has a soft side, but I think it's there, all right. Like I said, look, if you need anything, you can win a toss and be very approachable and all that kind of stuff. But I think the side of the media, that he portrays to the media and probably opponents and that kind of thing, they never really see that softer side, and that's the way he likes it.
Yeah, he has one of those handshakes that would break you in two if you didn't get out of the grasp of it pretty quickly. The other thing that struck me about your team and just any teams under Kilkenny is that spirit, the unbreakable spirit, people say that the Kilkenny teams seem to have. And like, when you get a group of people together, everyone is so different. There's no way that everybody can be born with an unbreakable spirit or that kind of edge that Brian brought. How did he instill that in you and get you to be like that?
Yeah, well, look, he just said that, everything won't go the plan always, and there will be tough times, and teams will get their dominance in games. But if you have an unbreakable spirit that you want to, you want to win it for not just yourself but for everybody else involved in the whole team, that's what will get you through. And you'll just dig in then, and you'll fight and try and get the momentum changed again. And I think that was proven numerous times over the years that when Kilkenny were under the cosh, that we just never gave in. Stay going, stay trying to break up the momentum and things like that, and try to sway it back in our favour. And you know, more often than not, that's what we were able to do. Even if we didn't go over the line, you know, we stay going right to the final whistle. And that's what Brian always said, you know, the final whistle, where the scoreboard only matters once, and that's at the end of the game. You stay going right till the referee blows the whistle. And, you know, like, I think he's built about six or seven teams as well, and every one of his teams had that. And even last Sunday, the All-Ireland final, you know, at the start of the year, nobody probably would have expected Kilkenny to get to an All-Ireland final or pull up such a display against, you know, a Limerick team that has dominated for the last 3, 4, 5 years maybe. And, you know, we were within 2 points of winning that All-Ireland, probably with, you know, Limerick probably would have had the better hurlers on the day. And but we just said fighting and fighting and fighting till the very end. And even when we went 6 points down, I was kind of a little bit worried that, you know, Limerick were going to take over and it was probably going to be a hammer. But you never really see a Brian Foley team getting a hammer because of that unbreakable spirit.
Did he change much over the years?
Not really. I suppose tactically he probably had no choice but to change and probably had to look at things a little bit differently and things like that. So that was really, it was only really small changes. You know, it was not never major, but he would never change the way he was, you know, and the way he wanted you to work hard and get the very, very best out of yourself. And he felt if we could, you know, if we could get the very best out of ourselves, that we'd be able to chance to win the most games, because Kilkenny always produced good hurlers. And like I said, if you could get 100% every day, we'd be in with a chance to win the game.
So when you think about things that you've learned from him, is there anything major that stands out?
Look, I suppose the unbreakable spirit thing stands out the most, I suppose, because, you know, if you sit down and think about it, logically, it makes sense. You know, if you stay going to the very, very end, you have a chance to win the game, because the hurling game can change, you know, a matter of minutes. And you know, if you can stay within a couple of scores, and that might mean 6 or 7 or 8 points, you know, if you get 2 quick goals, you have the momentum and suddenly you're right back in the game. So I'd say, if you know, going forward, I suppose if I was to take over a team, that's one thing I try to instill in the lads, belief and confidence to just stay going to the very, very end.
Just going on that, like, you talk about belief and confidence, and it's clear, Brian, just from the outset, anytime he was ever interviewed afterwards, he always did reference that idea of spirit and so on. But also just reading some bits and pieces around him, going down through the years, about just the standards he set, you know, when he came in first in Kilkenny. Was it notable from the very outset when he came in terms of raising the bar and the expectation around what was expected from you as a Kilkenny player, and the way you conducted yourself, and I suppose what you brought to training and your lifestyle away from it and all of that?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, constantly over the years, definitely that I was there, he tried to raise me even further, you know. So if we won an All-Ireland in September, he came in November, December, January, whenever we went back training, and tried to raise those standards. And if you didn't live up to those standards, then you were politely told that you were no longer required. But more often than not, lads responded to that. And, you know, you're talking about standards there. Like, if we were training at 7 o'clock, Brian would be there ready to go at 6 o'clock waiting on all the lads to come in. And, you know, when you see that, then, you know, suddenly you say, geez, I better get in here a bit earlier, and next thing you're in there a quarter to fix yourself before he even arrives, you know, to get all your, I suppose, prehab work done, or if you're getting injured maybe, just to get a rub out from the physio or that kind of stuff. And it went to the stage that we were kind of being in there an hour and a half before training even started, to, you know, to get ready for the session and to give it our absolute maximum on the night.
This is a hard question now, Owen. Were you afraid of him?
Afraid, I wouldn't say so, but, you know, you're always wary, I suppose, whether you do the right thing or the wrong thing.
Bricking it.
I wouldn't say it was fear or anything like that, but lots of lads, you know, you were just wary about doing the right. Yeah, exactly, respect. You have great respect for a man. You didn't want to let the man down, you know. You couldn't help but give everything you had just to get over the line for him.
And what would happen if you did let him down now?
Well, I don't think he'd see it as letting him down, but, you know, if you felt like you didn't give 100% or, you know, you could have done more, I think it'd be more the way you'd feel about it rather than him saying anything about it. He would never mention it. But look, you know, I often read Ray Keane's book, and he said he went in at half time and Alex Ferguson didn't even say anything. He wasn't after having the best of first half. Alex Ferguson just looked at him and he knew, he said he was after letting him down, and he went out and just gave everything in the second half. And I think that's the way Brian was as well. He would never say anything to him, but you'd know by him that if you weren't giving 100%.
Okay, so Owen, who is going to step into those very big shoes?
Oh, look, that's the burning question down here at the moment. Just look, I don't know is the honest answer, but look, I suppose Derek Ling will have to be in the mix after getting the under-21 or the under-20s to the All-Ireland final. I'd imagine Eddie Brennan will be thereabouts as well. And look, I don't know, maybe Michael Fenley or David Hurd all have experience at inter-county level as well. The other obvious one, I suppose, is Henry Shefflin that everybody's talking about, but I just don't think it would be good timing for Henry Shefflin at this moment in time. I can't see the Kenny County Board going to Henry Shefflin when he's already in a job and looking for him to come at this point in time. I just don't see that happening from the Kenny County Board, so I'd imagine it'll probably come from maybe the other four, or maybe it'll be a typical Brian Cody thing to get someone really out of the blue and nobody's really talking about somebody else, and they'll probably pop him in there.
Well, I hope it's not like Alex Ferguson and David Moyes, because that didn't end too well. Owen Larkin, thank you so much, and we will be talking to you again very, very soon, and very interested to see who does fill those roles. We're going to take a very quick break now, though, and Barry Geraghty will join us to talk Galway races.
Game on.
Racing. As they straighten up towards home, it's Caskmate, it's Echoes and Rain, who's gone to the front in the Connacht Hotel, but Maze Runner's going to try and go in pursuit. No room for Dutch Schultz. It's Echoes and Rain from Maze Runner, who's giving pursuit on the near side. Echoes and Rain has the advantage by a length and a half to two. The CV is very much completed now. Patrick Mullins has won the big one at Galway, the Connacht Hotel, at the 16th time of asking. Maze Runner is second, then Dutch Schultz, Flood of Joy was next with Caskmate, Favourite Moon, then Whiskey Sour in front of Far Out.
Now, that was the closing stages of the Connacht Hotel Handicap with Echoes and Rain. Running out the winner there, Patrick Mullins on board. Barry Geraghty joins us on the line. Barry, correct me if I'm wrong now. Has Patrick Mullins been spending a lot of years trying to win that race?
Oh, he has, and he's had so many fancied rides in there over the years. And no, he never got his head in front. And Willie has won it with second strings on so many occasions, just to rub Patrick's nose in it. So he's really he's struggled with this one, I think. But eventually he got it home on Echoes and Rain. It was a really good performance. And interestingly, Echoes and Rain has the option of the Galway Hurdle on Thursday, which is a double that hasn't been done over the years. So it'll be interesting to see if he lines up again.
Oh, fantastic. Because I read his column today, and he did say he wanted it really badly, but he was going to keep going and going. Didn't care how many years it was going to take him to get there. But he did get there, and you could see actually how much it means to him. And I'd imagine when you're trying for a long time, 16 years or whatever it is, that when you do actually get over the line, it must be an amazing feeling.
Definitely. And I suppose I had a very much so similar feeling. 2016, I think I won the Galway Hurdle on Tigris River for Joseph O'Brien and JP McManus. And I'd gone about 16 years too trying to win the Galway Hurdle and hadn't won it. I'd been second umpteen times as well. So I know the joy and getting that big one. So God was a brilliant week, and these are massive races. When Punchestown finishes in April, you know, the next stop is Galway, and that's what you're building towards, and just to get those big wins is so important.
Yeah, I'm actually watching on quite envious now, because it looks like it's great crack up there. Weather seems all right, big crowds, kind of a festival feel about it. So for the rest of the week then, we obviously know that the ones that most people get really excited about are the Plate and the Hurdle. What can we expect from them?
Oh, well, obviously two very competitive races, as they are every year. But the Plate in particular, the Shunter, who's a Cheltenham winner, he's lined up here. He's the likely favourite. He has gone up in the handicap a good bit since then. But he is a horse who still has potential. Cape Gentleman, Emmett Mullins runner, a faller last time. I just worry about that slightly. He's a horse, he's by Galileo, he's from the flat. Will he bounce back from that fall? Fire Attack, Joseph O'Brien, who fancies, was a good winner at Punchestown as in a novice handicap back in April. He'd have a big chance. Gavin Ackle, second of the Arkle in Cheltenham, another big fancy. And probably the one I like is Elbara, who also won at Punchestown in the festival. I think he's 2 from 5 over fences. But just for me, the right kind of profile, maybe not fully exposed, one on the up, and with Paul Townend and Willie Mullins, who won the rest last year.
Okay, so, and if you were to look at the week as a whole, Barry, give us a tip for the week.
Yeah, but the Galway Hurdle, another brilliant race as well. Plenty of chances. But the one I've been fancying since I looked at the entries last week is Party Central. Gordon Elliott, Davy Russell possibly ride this one. Got a £7 penalty for winning a handicap in Leopardstown back in the spring, which wasn't overly harsh. A little bit disappointing in Cheltenham when seventh, but on soft ground. There's a little bit of rain forecast tomorrow, but it's generally dry Wednesday and Thursday, so the drying conditions will suit Party Central. So it's a very competitive race. There's plenty of chances, but I'm sweet on her.
Okay, Barry Geraghty, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be talking to you, no doubt, later on in the week as well. Austie, just before we finish up there, we have a text in. It is from Tommy Rogers, and he's wondering now, have Kerry set the template and is everybody going to be lumping that high ball in, and we're going to see a lot of those Aussie Rules style marks now from here on in.
Well, it's the way to go if you have a talent like David Clifford, on the edge of the square. But I suppose the introduction of the mark has probably put a lens on it a little bit more, but it's a great way obviously of keeping teams honest to have that option at the edge of the square and so on. But we did see Kerry, I suppose, revert back to a lot of type in the second half in terms of, you know, playing it through the link and Paddy Clifford getting on it. But it's a great arrow to have in the quiver, to have a guy at the edge of the square that can feel ball and so on, particularly when there's a mark there to be taken. And we've seen Clifford took two yesterday that were at crucial times in the game, you know, when things weren't going their way, and it just settled Kerry and it kept them in touch going into the break.
Breathtaking leaps, I have to say. They were okay, that is all we have time for, Austin. Thank you very much for coming into studio today. I'll be back tomorrow, and we will be looking ahead to the Women's Euros semi-finals. Two cracking matches. Tara Kumar is up next.